And then we gradually, but pretty quickly, halved the numbers in terms of membership, halved the numbers in terms of group, halved the numbers in terms of Lifeline subscribers. I have my own feelings about why that's occurred, but I don't want to go into them as much as to say that at the OA meeting at the end of the day at the World Service Business Conference, which is the main reason I used to love going to World Service Business Conference, it wasn't to, you know, engage with the center mic. But the OA meetings were just wonderful. People were depressed. People were crying. You know, I OA is going to die. We're not doing it. What's going to happen? And a guy spoke. He says, I'm in AA as well as OA. And he said, you know, occasionally in AA we hear reports that things are not going well and we worry about whether AA will survive or not. He said, think about this. As long as there's a person under a bridge, there will be a person who comes up to that person and says, you know, I was once like you. And that's true. I cannot, whether OA lives or dies is less relevant to me than whether or not I continue to practice step 12. And I have to practice step 12 or I'm going to die. OA should continue to exist only so long as it is a proper guardian of the steps which it has adopted as its program. If it's a lousy guardian of the steps, it should die. And some other 12-step program dealing with compulsive eating should come up. Either OA changes, it continues, or it dies. But that's not relevant to my life as a person who has to carry the message to compulsive eaters who still suffer. If I'm in a town, I'm not in a town where there's no OA, but if I were in a town where there was no OA, I follow directions in this book for setting up an OA meeting and finding patients. You know, finding, that's what they call them in AA, isn't it? Finding people to talk to. But the instructions they give is, you know, find a family, go to a doctor, have them say, and here's what they have you say. Let his family or a friend ask him if he wants to quit for good and if he would go to any extreme to do so. This is page 90. If he says yes, and listen to these words because they're not words that I hear in OA. If he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. Not who is recovering, not who's working towards the recovery, not who's emotionally, spiritually, and physically well, but who has recovered. You should be described to him as one of a fellowship who, as part of their own recovery, try to help others and will be glad to talk to him if he cares to see you. It is a favor to me if you talk to me. If you're doing me a favor. I'm not doing you a favor. You're doing me a favor. I need to do this in order to recover. That's the message. Then they describe a conversation. And, you know, I'm not going to read it, but I invite you to read it. And the schematic outline that was handed out yesterday shows the sort of the argument or the way in which it was done. If any of you have ever been in sales and been given a sales pitch, that's what this chapter is. This chapter was written by people. If he says this, you say this. If he says that, you say this. That's what it is. It's a sales pitch. And it's brilliantly written. You know, some of the sales pitches I've seen in my life have been incredible. Insurance companies have marvelous sales pitches. When do you offer the pen? When do you take it away? When do you mention this? You know, and that's what this is like. But the general instructions are real simple, and they take no more than an hour and a half. You tell your story. You tell it in such a way that they understand that you have a physical problem and a mental problem. You tell your stories of eating uncontrollably, of the uncontrollable cravings you get when you eat certain kinds of food. You invite him to tell his own stories, or her, to tell his or her own stories. They may or may not respond, but you just continue to tell them. Then you talk about the mind problem. You talk about all the reasons you went back, and you give all the excuses that you gave to yourself to see if they're saying, yeah, I'm like that. That's like me. Here's my story. To see whether they respond. Now, you describe yourself as a compulsive eater. You don't describe them. I always say, I don't know if you're like me. If you're like me, then, you know, this is what I experienced. I don't know if you're like me at all. You may not belong here. I mean, people talk about, well, you know, all these diet programs, you pay money, you think you're getting value. Well, you know, you can't pay money in OA, but you can make it hard to get in. Not to make it hard to get in terms of saying, don't pass. I don't mean that. But to say, you may not be like us. You may not qualify. You have to think of yourself whether you really, really have this problem. or whether you're just along for the ride. TOPS is a non-profit organization that has more members than we do. It's a social support network. It's a therapy group. And that it's I think they got rid of the honking pig. I think they did. Well, they used to have that. And that, I would not wish that on anyone. If you gained weight, you'd have to wear a little pin or something. I think they got rid of that. I think it's a pretty reasonable program for people who need support. We're not here to give support. Our primary purpose isn't to hug one another and to tell one another that we love them. Our primary purpose is to carry the message of the 12 steps of recovery to those who still suffer. That's our primary purpose. So anyway, so you talk to that person and you tell your story. You tell them in such a way, the big book says, that he or she, he or she begins to understand the hopelessness of your condition and sees whether he or she identifies with that. Then let him ask you, the big book says, how you changed, because they're also able to say, and it doesn't, I'm not like that now. And you say, I'm not like that now. Food is no longer a problem. I am sane. You contrast the reasons you used to go back to the reasons you now don't go back. How did you get there? Let him ask that, if he will. And then you lay it on thick. You make it hard in the sense that you say, this is what I did. It's simple but not easy. And you find a way to describe what you did that makes it clear the steps you have to take, the steps. It's not I do phone calls. It's not I practice anonymity. It's not I can't remember all the tools. I write. It's not I write a lot. I did step 4, which involves writing. I do step 12, which involves occasionally using the telephone to make appointments. I don't do things over the telephone. If you call me on the phone, the chances are good that I'm playing solitaire while you're talking to me. Or I'm doing the dishes. Or something. My mind isn't concentrating completely on you because my eyes are doing something. I meet with people. I was talking to some people here before the thing, and I'll talk a bit more about that. There's one intergroup that I'm aware of in New Zealand that when someone phones OA, the OA number in New Zealand, with a problem, they send two people out to talk to that person. Is there any intergroup that you guys are aware of who does that? How about those of you in AA? Are you aware of doing that? It's 12-step calls. They're done all the time. I have a friend in AA who says, my sponsor told me it's time for me to do a 12-step call. You know? I mean, aren't we a little lethargic here? I remember reading the big book when I first started. We would read the big book, a chapter every meeting. And when we got to the chapter working with others, I would say, oh yeah, but those are AAers. You know, we talk on the phone. It's so much easier to do, you know. Yeah, it's so much easier to do. Where's that love of service and that need to give of yourself that Dr. Bob talks about? Where is the being woken up in the middle of the night? How many people say, as I do, you can call me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, any time whatsoever. Don't call me after you've eaten, but call me before. If you call me after, call me in the morning, we'll talk about why it happened. But if you call me and you're about to eat a donut, I'll get in my car and I'll meet you. Because that's what an alcoholic would do, an AA member would do if someone says, I'm about to drink a beer. They wouldn't say, oh, let's talk about how you're feeling on the phone. And that's how seriously I take it. Now, no one's ever asked me to do that, but I'm ready to do it. So anyway, they go on, and they say, okay, so you tell what he did. You tell what you did. And you stress the spiritual aspect very freely. If he's an agnostic or an atheist, you tell him that's no problem. And I hope I've given you some ways of talking to the agnostic or the atheist, because you really, I think, have to learn how to talk to people like me. When I say you, I don't mean you individually, but I think that people in OA who have a personal kind of God have a real responsibility to think about how they talk about that God in OA meetings when there are people who have not yet recovered. Because they have to include people like me. And if they don't, then they're doing things that are harming the primary purpose of the group. I'm not saying you don't talk about your God, but you be very careful to think about how you do it in such a way that's inclusive rather than exclusive. Okay? At any rate, you stress it. But when they come to the religious person, listen to how tough they are there. Your prospect may be on page 92. Your prospect may belong to religious. Oh, they say, when dealing with such a person, you better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. You have to work on the language. You have to make sure you use everyday language and not the language of a particular group that makes sense only to that particular group. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological, God-related religious terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. Now, this is in the big book. You ask people what Dr. Bob did. Hey, he would bring out Corinthians. You know, and John, whatever it was, I can't remember the passage, but Corinthians 1:13 or something. 3:16, thanks. No, I thought it was John 3:16. No, that's the wrestlers have that, don't they? Anyway, 3:16. But whatever it is, that's what Dr. Bob did. That's not what the first 100 agreed you should do. Dr. Bob had his own way of doing things, and he was a charismatic man, and I'll tell you, as an agnostic, non-believer, skeptical, not too cynical, but skeptical person. If Dr. Bob were alive today, I'd follow him anywhere, because he was clearly a saint. And he could say whatever he wanted to me, use whatever language he wanted, I would follow him anywhere. But I'm not Dr. Bob, and none of us is, probably. And Bill certainly wasn't. And Bill knew that the person who was going to read this book and recover wasn't going to be a Dr. Bob. So the instructions that are contained in this book are designed for ordinary people, not for Dr. Bobs. They're the rule and not the exception. Then they say your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. His religious education and training may be far superior to yours. In that case, he's going to wonder how you can add anything to what he already knows, right? I mean, I appreciate that. But he will be curious to learn why his own convictions have not worked and why yours seem to work so well. Well, they say, he may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish, constructive action. Let him see that you are not there to instruct him in religion. Admit he probably knows more about it than you do. But listen to these words. But call to his attention the fact that however deep his faith and knowledge, he could not have applied it or he would not drink. That's tough talk. That's not nice talk. That's real tough talk. Perhaps your story will help him see where he has failed to practice the various precepts, concepts, principles he knows so well. Okay? Tough talk. Honest, direct, from the heart talk. Loving, compassionate, but honest. Then they go on page 94. Outline the program of action explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. That is so important. I'll talk a bit more about that when I think I'll have time to read you a little bit of the AA history in which this whole concept came up. You know, and then your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all of the program. Don't contradict him. Tell him you once felt as he did, but you doubt whether you would have made any progress had you not taken action. Give him a copy of the book and leave. And it's that simple. So how long is this conversation? An hour and a half, 2 hours, not to talk and talk and talk and talk. Because here he was talking about efficiency, how to tell the story as well as you can. You know, I've been to lots of regional assemblies and World Service conferences, and I've always thought, no, I haven't always thought, because sometimes you get involved in the constitutional bylaw amendments and all the Robert's rules of procedures. But if I were running a meeting of an intergroup, or if I were in some way responsible for the planning of a meeting, not running it, I would say that if the primary purpose of every group is to carry the message to those who still suffer, that the primary efforts of any group should be to figure out whether it's carrying a good message and how to carry a better one, and not whether its policy should be amended. Consider, and I give this to you as just a simple example of something that I think would be such a great learning experience. You get 10 long-timers in the program. People have been around and have recovered. They've been carrying the message well for a long time. You put them in a sort of an isolation room. And on the stage is someone who is going to act the newcomer. And they know what they know what's going to happen, but they don't want to, we don't want them to hear anyone else. And one by one they come out, and the newcomer, the actor newcomer, says, "Boy, that was a great meeting. I learned so much. I love it. But you know what? I don't have an overview. And you know what? I've got to catch a bus in 5 minutes. Can you tell me about this program in 5 minutes?" Boy, could we learn from that. Each person working hard to prepare his or her version, 5-minute version, of what this program is all about. I practiced that. I think when I first started, I gave you a 3-minute version. I couldn't stop once I started. I had an allergy to the body. I don't know what I said, but whatever it is, I think I can do that. And I can talk about the miracle from my own experience, not from yours. Each one of us had different experiences. Each one of us has experienced the steps and the freedom and the the problem and the solution in his or her own personal way. What's your story? How do you tell your story? But it's short. It's a short conversation. If he thinks he can do the job in some other way, encourage him to follow his own conscience. He shouldn't be pushed or prodded. If he's to find God, the desire must come from within. Page 95. Page 96. Do not be discouraged if your prospect has not responded once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You're sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. Keep coming back. It works if you work with him. Bring a lot of love and you're worth it. What does that mean? Think about it. In contrast to these words, if he goes out and experiments with controlled eating, if he goes out and experiments with a diet for 6 months, and they come back with their tails between their legs, because if they're like us, they are going to come back with their tails between their legs, and if they're not like that, then what the hell are they doing in the program anyway? If they aren't people who suffer as we suffer, what kind of recovery can we give them? We can offer them nothing if they don't have our problem. We exist only as a fellowship that exists to give the message of the 12 steps. The message of the 12 steps, now, I know I'm offending some people, and I'm sorry for that, so take what you like, leave the rest. I don't, you know, but you're here and you're staying here, so what can I say? You can leave if you want. But this kind of toughness is the kind of toughness that I think both force us to be more relevant and more on about what our purpose is. We heard this morning about revving up our program. I think this is where we rev it up. What are we here for? And how best can we carry this message? Okay, so they say, suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume, this is page 96, he has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell a story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Now they go into what do you do for this person. He may be broken homeless. He may need money. You know, he says, don't avoid these responsibilities. In page 97, be sure you're doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. But, you know, that reminds me, Clancy, this great, many of you, I'm sure, must have heard him because he comes from here, but he's such a great speaker. He talks about being thrown out of the last flop house in Los Angeles and making his way without his front teeth. He says, you know, as I was flying in the air, as the bouncer threw him out, says, my 8 years of psychoanalysis gave me an ability to understand exactly the mental condition of the person who had thrown me out. And he says, he was angry. Anyway, he wanders into a clubhouse, an AA clubhouse, and he's eating a donut and he's drinking coffee. He has no place. He's homeless. He has no money. He has no teeth. And a guy comes up and says, I'm Bob. I'm your sponsor. Oh, hi, Bob. Read the book. The big book. Oh, well, I'd really like to read the book, Bob, but I have no place to read it in. I'm homeless. Read the book. Why? Well, I don't have money. I don't have food. Read the book. You know, it's sort of like, yeah, you know, whatever your circumstances are, Join the club. Do what you have to do. So, they go on, and they talk about all the things that you can do, but listen to the words that they say on page 98. Well, it begins on page 97, right at the bottom. For the type of alcoholic who is able and willing to get well, little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed or wanted. The men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. Yet we do go to great extremes to provide each other with these very things when such action is warranted. This may seem inconsistent, but we think it is not. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes a difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense, the shortest sentence in the big book. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Once you have cleaned your house, you can then help others. Right? Clean house, trust God, help others. But until you've cleaned your house, you can't help others. Now, I take this seriously. All the things that I've read to you, I take very seriously on my method of sponsoring. I don't want anyone to be dependent upon me. I want them to learn that, get their dependence from their own higher power. And therefore, I do not require them to phone me every day. As a matter of fact, I would be bored. If they feel they have to phone someone every day, I say, phone a newcomer. Phone someone else who's still suffering. You'll be doing them a lot of good. I've recovered. Phoning me doesn't do me much good. I've got to find people who haven't recovered to help them. But if you're working towards recovery and you feel a need to phone in your food, phone it into the newcomer. That newcomer will feel better. You'll feel better. You'll be helping the newcomer. I won't talk to you on the phone. I'll talk to you in person. I'm not going to talk to you about your problems. I'll talk to you about the steps that will solve your problems, that will help you, help you find God who will solve your problems. So my method of sponsoring is quite hands-off. I don't even, and I've never turned down a sponsorship. Never, ever. But a lot of people have turned me down when they find out that I'm not going to be their father, their confessor, their guide, their advisor, their lawyer, their friend, because I'm not any of those things. My only responsibility, and it's a heavy and important responsibility, is to give them the advice based on my experience on working the steps. That's my only job. So, I make appointments with them. I work out a plan of eating with them. I ask them, and I never tell them what to do. Never, ever, ever do I tell them what to do. I say, these are the instructions that I learned, and if you want to do them, this is how I understand them to be. If they want to do it another way, I will try it with them. I'm not going to force them to do anything. I say, make a list of your foods. Let's see what the issues are. Let's work out a good plan of eating for you. They talk about their foods. I cross-examine them. Now, you know, I joke about it. I don't really cross-examine them, but I do ask them, because often people come back to me with things that they've heard in the program or the book or books. They come up with someone else's plan of eating. They come up with a plan of eating that they've adapted for themselves that sometimes eases them into it. You know, well, I don't have to do this. I can do a bit of that. You know, there's one thing the Dignity of Choice pamphlet makes clear, and it's OA conference approved. It is the group conscience of OA. And that is that no one else's plan of eating is necessarily the right one for you. Don't accept anyone else's unless you really believe that it deals with your own particular foods and eating behaviors. And I think it's the responsibility of everyone to make clear. You know, you may believe in the blood type diet, or you may believe in sugar and flour, but sugar and flour may be your issue, but not their issue. I know I can eat things that people in this room cannot, and I know people in this room can eat things that I cannot. I think there's a tremendous overlap, and my own personal experience is that when I really look at what people abstain from in this program, that it's fat in combination with sugar and with salt, that there's a real overlap there, And my own personal observations is that I've watched a lot of people continue to be fat in the rooms while abstaining from sugar and flour, because they do not realize that the foods that have been their trigger foods are really combinations of fat and sugar and flour. That's my own observation. Take it or leave it. I don't care about that. But when I sponsor someone, I just work on them to see, are they giving themselves permission to eat things, if they have to lose weight, to eat things that continue to put on waste calories, that continue to give them waste calories. You know? Does anyone think that the bacon that they had for supper, for breakfast today, provided any nutritional content whatsoever? And if not, why was it eaten? I pose that to you. If you have to lose weight. If you don't have to lose weight, fine. You can enjoy your food. There's nothing wrong with enjoying food. But if you have to lose weight, why did you eat the bacon? It's got no nutritional value whatsoever, and it's full of fat. Why did you put butter on your bread? Why did you put jam on the bread? What's the purpose? To make it go down better? Who cares whether it goes down better if you have to lose weight? If you have to gain weight, it could be a different set of questions. Anyway, so I work. You can see that I'm provocative, and I ask questions, and I do it because I love the people I work with, and I want to do my best for them. And my best for them is to help them face honestly the issues relating to their food. As soon as we were, and I read through the book with them, and it depends so much on how well they read, how well they retain, how easily they can understand the language of the book, which is not easy, you know, and how they react to the words of the book, and whether there are people who say, why should I be reading this? My husband should be reading it, you know, things of that sort. I mean, I work with them on that. I sponsor women as well as men, because I don't have a deep relationship with the people I sponsor. I'm only there to give them the advice based on the experience I've had. I mean, that's my only job. So we read the doctor's opinion, we do what I've done, in a little bit more detail here, but we read it, and I mean, if they read more about alcoholism, and I say, did you enjoy this chapter? And they say, oh God, yeah, the businessman, and they go and they tell me what it's about. I don't read the story of the businessman. I don't read the story of the gym and the jaywalker. I'll say, did you notice this paragraph? Because this paragraph is important. On the other hand, if they say, well, I really like the chapter more about alcoholism, I don't remember much about it, but it sure made an impression on me, I'll read it to them, because there's things that you can get from those that, you know, so it just depends. So sometimes I'm short, sometimes I'm long. I make appointments with them, I meet with them whenever I'm available and they're available. If I have to go visit them, I'll visit them. Usually, I used to have a law office, and I used to meet in my office, which is a nice, quiet place. My wife doesn't, I have a home office now. My wife doesn't feel that I should be bringing people to my home, so I meet with them in coffee shops or in their own places, things like that. But I'll go anywhere to help someone, and I have gone all kinds of places to help people. So as soon as they have a plan of eating, I say, okay, you're abstinent, and now you're in a race with your mind, and I'm available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week if you need me. But we've got to keep you abstinent, and you've got to keep yourself abstinent. I'll help you as much as I can. Keep yourself abstinent. And you got to work the steps. So there is another plan that you have beyond the plan of eating. I know that different people have different ideas about a plan of action, and I'm not going to talk about the new tool. I'm not a lover of the tools, because not because they're not good tools, but because they're being used by some people and some groups as a substitute for the steps. And as long as they're being used as a substitute for the steps, that's completely contrary to our primary purpose. They aren't a substitute for the steps. They're a way of keeping yourself busy while you're working the program and working the steps so that you don't eat. But they're not going to keep you from eating. You know? I felt upset, so I did a tool. No, I felt upset. What steps didn't I do? What steps should I be doing? Because it's the steps that give us the recovery. Anyway, but I say, you not only need a plan of eating, now that you're in a race with your mind, that your mind may bring you back, you need a plan, a strategy for working the steps. Make a step 5 appointment as quickly as you can. Work out our appointments with each other so we can get you through to step 3 and you can start working on step 4. Get a sense of how long it's going to take you, how much time you want to devote to this. How much time do you want to devote? How important is this to you? Because I'm available. You know, so we work that out. And if they still want this, and I've had people say to me, no, I want more of a friend. I want to be able to talk to you about my problems. I say, I'm not here to talk about your problems. your problems will be solved. You know, they will be solved if you work the steps. And I'm not going to help you. Anytime they phone with a problem, I will say, put on your step four resentment list. Clearly it's a resentment. Now, I'm not popular with a lot of people. But that's how I do it, okay? And I think I get this from the big book. This is at least the impression I get from the toughness of the book. So when they're ready to do step four, I give them the forms. I say, this is how I do it and how I've been taught to do it. This is how to fill out the forms. You're on your own. Call me when you're ready to do step five. Now, I don't even call them and say, how you doing after 5 weeks? Frankly, I don't remember how long ago they saw me, because it's up to them to keep track of how they're doing. If I see them at meetings, I say, aren't you supposed to be doing your step four? Isn't it time for you to do step five? And maybe I'll prod them and say what my sponsor said to me, just get it done. You'll have a chance to do more. But that's about it. And if they want to do step five with me, they do step five with me. And it usually doesn't take long, and I tell them how to do 6, 7, and 8. And prepare for a 9. And if they don't want to do it with me, as some people don't, I say, fine, well, this is how I do step 9, and maybe this is the way you could be doing step 5, and maybe this is the way you could be doing step 5 with the person who's going to be doing it, but make sure that after step 5, after you admit to another human being, you're also going home, reviewing what you've done, asking God, thanking God that you know him better, reviewing, seeing whether you have done everything, whether you're complete. Then you do 6, then you do 7, then you do 8 on the same day. So I go through that. And then I even say before that, after you have admitted to another human being, are you delighted? Can you look the world in the eye? Can you be alone at perfect peace and ease and have your fears fall from you? Because if they haven't, go back and continue your step 4. There's more to do. So I just guide them along what I've been guided to do. And if they stick, by the time they finish step 9, they're free of the food. You know, I give them whatever experience I can give them. I'm based on my many years in the program and talking to a lot of people about making amends. Sometimes amends are really complicated. Sometimes, especially for people who have been victims, it's very complicated to figure out what amends you owe to a person who has abused you. Very hard. You know, and I give them the wisdom of friends of mine, not as much my wisdom, but the wisdom of friends of mine who have been through that situation and the various things that they have done. And remember, the amends come from, in some way, allowing that person to continue to do further harm to himself or herself, usually himself or herself. So I mean, it's very complicated, and I can't go into it. I didn't have enough time to talk about it in step 9, and I don't have enough time to talk enough. But I help them work through what works for them, not what works for me. I listen to people say, well, I'll make this kind of amends, and I think to myself, oh God, you know, this is ridiculous. But if it touches their heart, that's what's important. I will challenge them if it looks to me like they're trying to get themselves off easy, but not if it's with the, yeah, this is what I have to do. Well, fine. You know? And then they finish step 9, and I say to them, let me tell you about step 10, because the sponsees I've had who have relapsed it's always been step 10 that they've missed. And I always tell them how important step 10 is. I tell them about step 11. I talk about carrying the message. And I say, okay, you know what? Phone me if you want to do a step 5 part of a step 10 with me. Phone me if you need any experience on how to deal with a sponsee. But go out there and sponsor. Spend your time talking to people who haven't recovered, not to people who have. If sponsees want to talk to me after a meeting and there's a newcomer there, we both know that we don't talk after the meeting. We talk to the newcomer. It's the person who still suffers who should get all of our attention. Okay, that's sponsoring. Let's see if then I can. And my responsibility. And now this is one of the few good things that come out of World Service Visit Conference. I've been to tons of them, and you know, I listen to the debates and people getting so upset and you know all that. You know, as someone said yesterday, you know, there are people in OA who won't be content until there are 12 tools. And I think it's probably right, you know. All the debates that go on in World Service Business, all the debates that go on, you know, miss our concept. Our concept of this consensus. You know, we shouldn't vote on things, we should develop consensuses. This is a God-inspired program, whatever our God means to us. I won't go on too much about that, but at any rate, the change in the definition of abstinence to say not only to abstain from, you know, food, but also from compulsive eating behaviors or compulsive behaviors, and also to strive towards and maintain a healthy body weight. That's my responsibility as a sponsor. How can I sponsor if I can't carry the message, if I don't look as if I can carry the message? Now, on the other hand, I've known people who have joined the program weighing 500 pounds, 400 pounds, 300 pounds, and who worked the steps quickly, and in 3 months they've recovered, and they're ready to sponsor. Well, they have a responsibility to say, I'm losing weight, but I clearly haven't yet reached a healthy body weight. They have a responsibility to say that so people understand that they are recovered people. So, you know, I think that's very important. But to strive towards and maintain a healthy body weight is really important. Not a normal, because who knows what normal means, but healthy. And I think that that's a responsibility of anyone who wants to sponsor. I have time to talk about... I've talked about group. Oh, I haven't said this to you, and I guess I should. Well, yeah, I will say it. It's not quite on subject, but I don't criticize OA conference-approved literature. Literature approved by the group conscience of OA. Whether I like it or not is another matter, but I don't criticize it because it represents the group conscience of OA. But there are two publications that are tremendously popular within OA that are not conference-approved literature. And that's the 12-Step Workbook and the Step 4 Inventory Guide. Both of those were put together by the Board of Trustees. They come as a set of questions from the OA 12 and 12. But they are used by many people as the way of doing the steps because somehow they're official. And there's no alternative way of doing the steps that you will find anywhere in OA except maybe a guide to the steps for the pamphlet, A Guide to the Steps for You and Your Sponsor. And I just want to point out that those two books are only board-approved literature and not group-conscience-approved literature, and they do not represent the official way of doing the steps, the Big Book way, the OA way. OA has no official way of doing the steps. As a matter of fact, if you read the OA 12 and 12 in Step 4, it says, many of us do the steps, Step 4, the Big Book way. And yet there's no guide for doing the steps, the Big Book way, in OA. So I just point that out. I have very little time.
Is that the yellow?
No, it's the maroon book. I think it's the maroon book. I think, yeah, it's sort of maroon. I don't know colors well enough. It's probably taupe. But anyway, taupe covers everything. All right. If a meeting's primary responsibility is to carry the message to those who still suffer, every meeting ought to consider whether or not it's doing a good job of carrying the message to those who still suffer. Now, there are lots of meetings around where there's no one who has recovered. And that's to be understood and accepted because there are a lot of places where people come to OA and there's no recovery there. But every meeting should at least be able to say, we have hopes of recovery. We're working towards recovery. This is what we as individuals and we as a group are doing to become a recovered people, a group. Because my experience and the experience of AAers is clearly that you don't need a recovered person to recover. You need a relationship with your higher power that you develop for working the steps. Don't be dependent upon sponsors. Be dependent upon the steps. Because that's how you reach your own higher power. Sponsors are there as guides and not as people who order you around. And I hear this in AA speakers, I hear as well, talking about, my sponsor told me to do this. Well, okay, that's one way of sponsoring. But I read this book and it says to me, burn the idea in the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone, so long as he puts his dependence upon God rather depends upon others. And we are control freaks, and I worry about anyone who wants to control me. Okay. So meetings, what should meetings do? Well, if a meeting doesn't emphasize the steps, what is it there for? If its primary purpose is to carry the message of recovery to those who still suffer. If a meeting in some way, shape, or form doesn't say, this is what this program is all about, this is what we're here to tell you about, this is what we're here to ease you into and explain why we need these steps to recover, what is that meeting doing to OA as a whole? Every group is autonomous, except in matters affecting others or other groups in OA as a whole. How are they carrying the message if the meeting is a tool meeting? Unless somehow they say, we study the tools, but we want to remind you that the steps are the essence of the program. The tools are one way of helping us work the steps. That's fine. A lifeline meeting. Nothing wrong. I mean, the meeting that I had co-founded with people that read literature, it was a great meeting as a pick-me-up, but not as a meeting that invited people to come and be members of OA, because we didn't have any progression through the steps in them. We didn't talk about the steps. We'd read the promises. We'd read this passage or that passage. There was no progression working us towards recovery. So I think every meeting has to ask itself, what are we doing? Are we happy, joyous, and free? How best can we carry the message? I'm right on time, but that means I left something out. By the way, I use the word sponsor very carefully, and I don't use it. I mean, the word sponsor is used within OA to mean all kinds of things. You can have food sponsors and phone sponsors and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I use the word sponsor, which is not used in the big book, as a person who helps, who guides a person with experience through the steps. You know, so you ask me, do I have a sponsor? I don't need guidance through the steps. I've already been guided through the steps. Do I have people I talk to on a relatively regular basis? Sure, I do. Do I have people who are my mentors? Yes, I do. Do I talk using questions instead of answers? Yes, I do. Do I sound like Dick Cheney? I hope not. You know. He used to do that. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be doing it. I hate that style of talking. But I do have people I talk to. Do I call my sponsors? Well, I don't, because the use of the word sponsor to me is it should be restricted to a person who gets you through the steps and has you go on and do something else. That's how I use the word. So I just want to be sure of that I've got nothing. I don't call down food sponsors or telephone sponsors or anything else. But the vigor that's required is there. I want to read to you just a bit. I don't have much time. A passage from that wonderful book that Bill wrote, AA Comes of Age. And you know the story, many of you do, about Bill Wilson, 6 months of recovery, tries to carry the message to all kinds of people, fails with every single one of them, and says, either to Lois or to Dr. Silchrist, I haven't yet been able to find the exact reference, I haven't been able to keep a single alcoholic sober. And either Lois or Dr. Silchrist, or maybe both, say, yes, you have, you're sober. And at that moment, Bill begins to realize that his work with other alcoholics has kept him sober. And around that time, he talks to Dr. Silchrist, and he says, no one's getting this message. And Dr. Silchrist, in AA Comes of Age, says, I personally don't think he says it quite this way, but this is the way Bill says he said it. Look, Bill, you're having nothing but failure because you are preaching at these alcoholics. You are talking to them about the Oxford Group precepts of being absolutely honest, absolutely pure, absolutely unselfish, and absolutely loving. This is a very big order. I'm looking in another pamphlet because Bill quotes him in another pamphlet, Three Talks Medical Society, slightly differently. He says, skip that account of your hot flash, which has more meaning because of the speaker today. but the hot flash meaning the being on the mountaintop and the clean wind blowing right through him, that sudden experience he had. And Dr. Silchrist said that. This is a very big order. Then you top it off by harping on this mysterious spiritual experience of yours. No wonder they point their finger to their heads and go out and get drunk. Why don't you turn your strategy the other way around? Aren't you the very fellow who once who showed me the book by William James, Variety of Religious Experience? This is a great book. It's available, you know, as a free download. It's just hard to read. It's a very hard but wonderful book. Listing all kinds of spiritual experiences people had, many different kinds of experiences. It's a brilliant man, James. Silkworth and Bill both believed that that book says that deflation at great depth is the foundation of most spiritual experiences. Well, I've done a word search of the word deflation and educational, because they also quote James as saying educational variety in varieties of religious experience. It's not to be found there. But it is true that many of the experiences that James describes are experiences of absolute despair at the moment of the conversion experience. Absolute, you know, if there is a God, let him help me now, Bill said. And that's, so it's true that deflation of great depth is described, but never, the words are never used. No, Bill, have you also forgotten that Dr. Jung told the person who helped Ebby that his only hope of salvation was a spiritual experience? No, Bill, you've got the cart before the horse. You've got to deflate these people first. So give them the medical business, so give it to them hard, pour it right into them about the obsession that condemns them to drink and the physical sensitivity or allergy of the body that condemns them to go mad or die if they keep on drinking. Page 68 of AA comes to me. Coming from another alcoholic, one alcoholic talks to another, maybe that will crack those tough egos deep down. Only then can you begin to try out your other medicine, the ethical principles, the five. You get honest with yourself, you get honest with another human being that I described that you got from the oxygen. Now, he goes to Akron, Ohio, a business deal, it falls flat, he's left alone, he's in the Mayflower Hotel, which you can still visit, it's a senior citizen's residence. Evidently you press the buzzer and a voice says yes. You say, can I, I'll come in. You know, and you walk in, this is where the telephone directory is, this is where the bar was, you know. Anyway, I'd love to do that someday. I haven't done it yet. But anyway, he's in the Mayflower Hotel, the gay crowd inside the bar. Maybe he can just have a ginger ale, maybe even a few drinks. And then he gets scared because he knows he's about to drink. And then he realizes the only thing that will help him is to find another alcoholic to whom he will tell his story. Not whom he will convert and save, but to whom he must tell his story. And he phones around, and there's lots of wonderful stories, but he phones up, he finally meets people, he phones Oxford Group people, he goes to Church Directory, he phones Reverend Tunks. He says, I don't know why I picked Tunks, I always think because it rhymes with drunks. Anyway, Tunks gives him 10 names, and those 10 names aren't available. He says, I'm a rum hound from New York, I'm looking for an alcoholic to talk to, And Tunks evidently thinks that means that there will be two drunks instead of one. He explains it. He finally phones Henrietta Seiberling. Henrietta Seiberling was the estranged daughter-in-law of a very rich family in Akron, Ohio. And she says, I know exactly what you mean. Come down and see me. And he goes down and sees her. And she says to him, we have this guy in our Oxford groups. It's Dr. Bob. Everyone loves him, but he's a hopeless drunk. And if, you can hear Henrietta Seiberling talk as well. And she tells this story. She's that in the Oxford groups had been in existence in Akron, Ohio for a year and a half before Bill came there. And there's actually a picture you can find in the newspaper, a clipping of sort of the meeting of the Oxford groups where businessmen, I doubt any women, and clergymen, I came to a big banquet and the Oxford groups sort of made. And there was a whole bunch of Oxford groups people. And Henrietta Seiberling had actually manipulated a series of meetings to force Dr. Bob to admit that he was a drunk. Everyone knew he was, but he wouldn't admit it. He would never confess this. And it was a meeting that she talks about that where everyone would confess their deepest things. Everyone was in on it. And Dr. Bob says, well, I'm a drunk. And he fell down, and they cried, and they prayed, and he worked. Nothing worked. He was a drunk. So when Bill phoned Henrietta Seiberling, says, I think this is the person you can talk to. And she phones, and Anne, Dr. Bob's patient wife, says, well, he can't talk to me. He's made a big fuss about Mother's Day. This is May the 11th, 1935. And he can't talk to you. She didn't say, Bill says, that... He brought me a potted plant. She didn't say, Bill says, that the plant was on the table and he was potted underneath it. Anyway, so Dr. Bob says, okay, for Henrietta, I will do this, but 15 minutes, that's it. They come at 5 o'clock, they leave at 11. Bill sets him aside, and Bill describes what he said to him. And he says, in our first conversation, I bore down heavily on the medical hopelessness of Dr. Bob's case. He says, this was news to him. Although he was a doctor, this was news to him. Because, of course, it hit him where it landed. It was Dr. Bob's finally seeing his own drinking experiences highlighted in the concept of the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind, the cravings and the mental coming back. It absolutely explains our addiction and, frankly, any addiction. Absolutely explains it. And explains it suddenly. Says, okay, now I understand this. Now I see that I'm hopeless. Is there any hope? Yes. Your mind can change. You can never change your body. Your mind can have you accept the fact of your body and be sane. So why would you eat anything that kills you? And he says at page 70 of AA Comes of Age, you see, our talk was a completely mutual thing. I had quit preaching. I knew that I needed this alcoholic as much as he needed me. This was it. And this mutual give and take is at the very heart of all of AA's 12-step work today. This was how to carry the message. The final missing link was located right there in my first talk with Dr. Bob. I need to carry the message. You don't know how much you've helped me. Or maybe you do, but you've helped me tremendously. Whether you each one of you recovers or not, my ability to carry the message to you has enormously helped me to continue to recover. Just a few more things that I'm going to finish. I want to talk a bit about traditions. I was a member of a very secret organization in OA. It's called the Traditions Police. Every so often, you know, I would get up in a meeting and says, you can't read that. It's not OA approved literature. You know, you can't say that. This is wrong. This is a breach of tradition 2.7.3. And those of you who are familiar with the AA 12 and 12 will remember Rule 62, the whole concept that you put in all these rules, ultimately everything blows up. Rule 62 is, don't take yourself too seriously. And if you read AA Comes of Age, you'll read about a message that comes from Japan in the early days of AA. We have a crisis here. There are two AA programs. One of them has 12 steps and one of them has only 10 steps. The one that has 10 steps charges 7 yen or something to come in. What do we do? And the General Service Office writes back and says, well, one of them will live and one of them will die. Because God's in charge. You know, let go. The primary tradition is tradition 5. All the others are part of that tradition. How best do we carry the message to compulsive eaters? The traditions are there to help us carry the message best to other eaters, to other eaters who still suffer, compulsive eaters who still suffer. And if we look at the traditions as a set of traditions, not rules, but traditions, experience bearing fruit, learning from them, we'll do a far better. I've been involved in battles about whether I can use the word AA on a poster. Blaine, this guy I talked about, a real mentor for me, who saved my life. This guy agreed that he would do a big book study for OA. We agreed that I would do the first half of step one because he couldn't discuss the allergy of the body, so I discussed the allergy of the body. But beyond that, the rest of the steps, he did. I did a bit of step 12 because carrying the message to the eater who still suffers. He didn't do that. He was an AAer. He brought with him 5 other alcoholics, 5 other AAers who helped him set up the audiovisual display that he uses in his big book workshops. He used to use. He's ill. This man gave of himself, and these other people gave of themselves for OA. I create a poster. A longtime AAer brings the message alive of the big book alive to OA. You can't do that. That's breach of, endorsement of other issues or whatever the tradition is. Okay, I'm off. I don't argue anymore. I just don't get involved in those things. I don't want to be a member of the traditions police anymore. Traditions are there as guides, and I think it's important to remember. They're not rules. You can't break a you can break a tradition. You can't breach a tradition. Because you can only breach a rule, and there are no rules in AA, in OA, and AA. So I just wanted to say that. I also wanted to point out, and I heard this from a speaker from Los Angeles, actually, that his sponsor said to him, if you are anonymous at any level other than press, radio, films, television, and other public communication, then you're breaking Tradition 11. Now, I ask you, my name tag is Laurie C. That's not my name. My name is Laurie Cherniak. If you come to Winnipeg, you'll never find me by looking for Laurie C. Because you don't know how to spell Cherniak, you'll never find me anyway. But, that's a Laurie, let alone. That's right. That's right. Now, both my names are easily misspelled, which means my business website is a real problematic one. No one can ever get to it. But and it also says OA. Why does it say OA? Is there press here? Is there radio, films, television, other public media communication? Shouldn't we think about whether to say Overeaters Anonymous so that people who aren't members but should be know that there's such a thing? I throw this out to you. What about our meeting signs? My meeting sign, meeting I go to, when I brought the speech forward and talked to our meeting, I said, this is what I heard. We all agreed. We have a meeting in a hospital. It now reads, you say OA arrow, you know. Now it says Overeaters Anonymous, a 12-step program for people who compulsively eat. No fees, no dues, no scales, it works. Everyone welcome. So I just want to, you learn a lot by reading what's called the long form of the traditions in the back of the big book. They're the way they're originally done. And you'll see, it's our public relations policy. Public relations policy is based on attraction, not promotion. That doesn't mean our personal policy is based on attraction, not promotion. I can go, and I do, I go through customs, and they ask me, what are you, American immigration, they come here from Canada. What are you going to? I'm going to an Overeaters Anonymous convention, workshop, whatever. Oh, what's that? Well, I can bore them, and I do. I'm sitting beside someone on the plane, and they look as if they might be candidates. I say, where are you going to? So ask me where I'm going to. So I can talk about it. I'm not ashamed to be a member of a fellowship that has allowed me to recover, has given me the ability to recover from an illness that I had, and then I want to share it with others. Okay. It's 11 o'clock, so I'll finish just very quickly. The provocations, I just want to be sure I've covered them all. Okay, I gave you 12 provocations at the beginning. Give me 5 minutes, I'll be finished. I know you'll give me 5 minutes. So, the 12 provocations. Have I covered them? I think I have. I am a recovered compulsive eater, not a recovering one. I've beaten that to death. Abstinence is not the most important thing in my life. Without exception, the consciousness of the presence of God is. I think I've explained that, but just to repeat, as long as I'm conscious of the presence of my higher power, as long as my direct connection is there, my mind is clear. As long as my mind is clear, I know that certain foods, certain food ingredients, and certain eating behaviors cause me uncontrollable cravings and will send me back to what I used to be. I no longer want to be like that because my mind is clear. Therefore, I am abstinent. Abstinence is not important to me at all. If I keep sane, I will be abstinent because I will not want to eat the foods, the food ingredients, or indulge in the eating behaviors that cause me uncontrollable cravings. Although a sponsor is available is very important for recovery, a sponsor is not necessary for recovery. I put that in there because it's your responsibility and no one else's if you aren't on the path to recovery. You can't say, oh, I just can't find the right person to sponsor me. You don't need a sponsor. Sponsors are great, really helpful, really important for recovery because it's much more difficult and in a sense lonely. But you know what? I get emails from people, because the website has got a number of hits, and And they email, do you sponsor? Do you sponsor by email? I say, I'll never turn down sponsoring, but I say, face-to-face is, in my experience, the way to go. I have not been very successful in sponsoring people by phone, by Skype, or by email. Why don't you find another person who wants to recover in your place? You know, they say the meetings are no good, there's no recovery. Find another person, and whatever help I can give you in helping you to recover with each other, I'll be happy to give. And because that's what happened to me. So why can't it happen with them? You can recover in weeks. I think I've demonstrated how quickly step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 can be done. You know, it's your responsibility if it takes longer. The tools of recovery are not an essential part of the OA program. I just talked about that. You don't take steps 1 and 2. You acknowledge them. Joe Charlie do such a great job of showing step 1 is the problem, step 2 is the solution. Step 1 is powerlessness, step 2 is power. Step 1 is despair, step 2 is hope. It's as simple as that. You just acknowledge. There's no taking of them, you acknowledge them. The speaker doesn't, the closing ceremonies don't go on until 11:30, so you've got some time. Steps 3, 6, 7, and 8 should not take a long time to get to. I've described that. You don't make amends to yourself. I don't know if I've described that, but the big book says the rule is you should be hard on yourself and easy on others. Your job is to make amends for harms you've done to others, not harms you've done to yourself. The biggest amend you're ever going to make to yourself is you're not going to be the person you once were. That's the amend you're making. Now, I understand a lot of people when they say, I have to make amends to myself. It means to them, I have to learn to say no. I have to take care of myself. I have to have times of relaxation and not just keep on giving, not being a martyr. That's true. But if you look at it more as, well, you should look at it with respect. I would look at it, because I was like that, as, yes, I have to keep in fit mental and spiritual condition, so there is time I need to take off by myself, or else I won't be valuable to others. And I must learn to say no, not because I'm put upon, but because other people I'm enabling other people to use me, and that's harming them. It doesn't harm me as much as it harms them. So I'm doing it for their sake, not for mine. So that's how I see it at any rate. You should not sponsor until after you've completed step 9. Using the word sponsor in the way I'm talking about, Big Book says clearly, I'll be reading at the end, you cannot give away what you do not have. You need that recovery in order to give it away. You can help each other recover. That's not sponsorship as much as helping each other recover, if neither of you recovered. Service is not slimming. Service, if it doesn't come from the heart of the need to help others after you've recovered, is simply a way of keeping busy. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with helping OA, doing the chairs and all that. Keeps you busy. There are AAers who go to meeting after meeting after meeting during the day because they can't, they don't want to go outside, you know, and I understand that. And if there are, and I understand Los Angeles, there are enough meetings you go to in LA. That's wonderful while you're working the steps. Do everything you can to help OA continue. But it's not going to be slimming in and of itself. The steps are what will help you. But we used to have a slogan in OA, service is slimming. And that's just not true. And it's proved by the number of people I know, and I'll make you a bet you know, who give so much service and are really people who do not seem to be working towards a healthy body weight. Food can be discussed at meetings. I know most of the meetings here you do discuss food, but we were joking. Some of us are talking about that. I mean, I don't know if any of you know Bob Fisher, who's from Toronto, but was chair of the board. He tells a hilarious story about being in a meeting where you couldn't discuss food, and someone said, and then I ate these round white balls. And he said, from that moment on, we were all trying to figure out what the hell this food was. And then three of us got together, and we each had a different food in mind, and we asked the speaker, and she had a fourth, and she was talking about a fourth one. Boy, well, listen to the big books on this issue. In our belief, page 101, any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. If the alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a time, then usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these messages, these attempts at the impossible have always failed. Imagine my telling my goose story without being able to talk about a goose. I mean, it's just that simple. Imagine a drunk at an AA-er at an AA meeting saying, and then I took a drink of a brown fizzy liquid. Imagine that. Just, we're trying to protect people from themselves. The honesty that they deserve from us is to say, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen until you need heat. Okay. That was an embarrassed silence there. Because the last provocation is, depending on how I phrase it, in the book I've written, some people who come to OA should consider not coming back unless and until they're ready, which is not very nice. But you can phrase it another way. Some people come to OA, it's the responsibility of everyone who comes to OA to understand what it means to have a desire to stop eating compulsively and therefore to declare themselves as members. I don't believe in throwing anyone out, but I do believe in making, if they don't understand the message of what the problem is, how do they know whether they qualify as people who have a desire to stop eating compulsively? What does it mean to be a compulsive eater if it doesn't mean to be hopeless because once you start, you can't stop and you can't stop from starting? I don't know what it means. It means you just eat a lot? All kinds of people eat a lot who just need a good diet. And lots of people who just need, just 4 ounces, that's all I really need? I didn't realize that. I thought I needed 8 ounces. Bang, you lost weight. You know? Sane people don't need OA. Because OA promises sanity. Right? You can recover, the power of greater stuff can restore you to sanity. Well, if you're not insane, where's the restoration that's going to be there? Okay, I've annoyed you enough. I'll tell you that the word trudge does not mean, no matter what anyone else wants to tell you, to walk with a purposeful step. It means to walk with a weary step. I'm going to end up reading the last page of page 164, part of it. And it's a weary job. This is a tough job. It's the most fulfilling thing I've ever done. And I would say that I've lived a life where some people would say that I've done some fulfilling things outside of OA. But for me, it's the most fulfilling thing I've ever done. And it's hard work and I get tired. Today is my 40th wedding anniversary, and I'm in Los Angeles. My wife is in Victoria, BC. My wife gave me permission to come. She knows how important it is for me to carry the message, and she knows that I'm a better person. That's how we've been able to survive for 40 years. I'm going to come home probably at about 9:30, 10 o'clock tonight. But I can tell you, it's been worth it. It'll be worth it for my wife. But it's wearying. I'm going to be very tired in the traveling I'm doing, but I have an energy that lives with me because of that. Story, people have told me, they thank me for the work I've done. I appreciate it very much. I was a star in OA once in my first year of the program, and I remember the moment I realized I was a star, and that was the moment I began my first relapse. I don't ever want to be a star. I am just a compulsive eater. Most of what I've said, almost all of what I've said, probably everything I've said, I've heard from other people. I've just been able to bring it together. There's an AA story, a guy speaks, and people standing ovation, you're great, they come up to him. Your interpretation of step 3 just changed my life. Don't thank me, thank God. Another person comes up, your story rendered my heart. I finally realized I have a problem. Thank you so much. I'm going to work the step. Don't thank me, thank God. And a long-timer comes up to him and says, that was a really good speech. Don't thank me, thank God. A long-timer looks and says, you weren't that good. So I want to thank you. And I'm going to finish with page 164. I think it's always good to finish with page 164. I know as soon as I finish, I'll remember what I should have said. But at any rate, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you till then. Thank you. Well, it's on our website.
Oh,
yeah, there's a place to click on it. It's laurie@oab.com.